Now, this Wednesday, the 20th of August, the late, great Phil Lynott would have been 65. And at the tail end of 1985, I recorded what ended up being Phil's last ever radio interview before his untimely death on January the 4th, 1986. A few months prior to our meeting at Phil's home in Kew, and 2 years after the demise of Lizzie, it enjoyed further success by making up once again with former Lizzie guitarist Gary Moore, who'd walked out on the band during an American tour in 1979 to score a top five hit with a single, Out in the Fields.
At an airport, you know, and we just made up there. That, I mean, there was no argument really. Talked our way over. We decided then, you know, with us being pals again, I thought I got our office to get onto him and see if he'd play at the Lizzie Farewell thing at Hammersmith, because we were recording it, and I thought it'd be a good thing to do. And so he turned up at that, which ended up on the Life album, you know, the Farewell thing with all the guitar players. And after that, he was touring Ireland, and they were doing a documentary on him, and they asked me would I come over and play a couple of numbers with him, like Parisian Walkways and a couple of songs like that. So I jumped up and did that, and that went so well. I mean, his management seen that and was so impressed with that. They thought that we worked very well together, and they said we should actually record together. Well, Gary had a song that he thought would suit my voice, and asked me to play, you know, to record. It was Out in the Fields, and I had a song called Military Man that I was playing, and they liked that, and then we just went in and recorded the two songs, and then somebody said, Do Still In Love With You, and they took one of the live things from, you know, the Belfast concert, and next of all, it was a single, and the single went on to do really well.
Do you think this thing about you hating each other, was it just bad publicity then in the first place, as I say, when Gary left him, was he?
There was an element of truth in it. I mean, not hate, but obviously we're in the middle of an American tour. I sent out for Midgeur, who I was pals with at the time, and Midgeur came over and stood in for about 3 or 4 months while we finished off various tours of America, Australia and Japan. The reason it looks so bad, I think, you know, I mean, because I'm used to people leaving bands and stuff, but it was A, I thought the way he did it was bad, and B, was that every time then we'd do an interview, people would say, Gary says this, he left because of this, this, and what do you think of Gary? And I'd go, well, I think this, this, and this of Gary. And then people would go to Gary and say, well, Philip Lynott said, you know.
Is this just the one-off then, or do you plan to record another single or maybe even an album together?
It started off as a one-off. I mean, obviously we're both aware that if it was successful, our managements would, you know, find time for us to work together again. I'm not adverse to working with him again on projects or on various things, whether it be my solo album or his album or a duo album or singles. I'm not that against it, but I wouldn't, you know, I don't think either of us would work with each other permanently, you know.
Phil, of course, would have been 65 tomorrow. This particular interview recorded in late 1985, prior to his sad death on January the 4th, 1986. Yesterday, we heard how he teamed up once again with former Lizzie guitarist Gary Moore to record Out in the Fields, and I was desperate to find out the possibility of them both working together again in a live situation.
We had to rehearse for TV shows like the Old Grey Whistle Test asked us to do a couple of tracks live, and we did that ECT live. So we've done it, we've rehearsed live, and obviously we learned the numbers by rehearsing live. So we could, I mean, I wouldn't put it out of the way of me appearing at one of his gigs and say doing a couple of numbers or vice versa, you know, if the single is successful. But as I say, we just went in to record the songs first, and what's happening now is really just, I mean, it's really down to who comes up with an idea that's acceptable to the both of us. You know, but the only thing I can definitely say is that we won't be joining to form a band, you know, on a permanent basis.
It's 2 years now since Thin Lizzy split up. You then formed Grand Slam along with Lawrence Archer and also Mark Stanway, to name but two. What actually happened there? Because, I mean, everything seemed to be going great for you, and then all of a sudden the split. What actually went wrong, if anything?
Well, A, we were finding it difficult to get a record deal. And B, we started to run out of money. I mean, there was people interested in giving us record deals, but negotiation, and then we want to hear some more, and then we want to see the band, and da-da-da. And meanwhile, we were doing gigs here, there, and everywhere, and we were just starting to run out of cash. So anyway, everything was okay. I went off to America to do something with Huey Lewis, and when I came back, Mark and Lawrence had left. You know, I read about it in the papers. I mean, nobody rang me and told me that they were leaving.
When you were playing with Grand Slam, when you were playing live, did you find that the fans still expected you to do, you know, old Lizzie stuff and You know, did they accept that it was Grand Slam and not Thin Lizzy, or...?
Yeah, I think they did. I mean, I think the supporters that came up, well, obviously, well, a lot of them were ex-Lizzy supporters, you know, that came along. And they were very understanding, the ones that did come along. And I'll be very grateful to them, because it was a very bad period in my life, insofar as personally, you know, like my private life was falling apart a bit, so I thought it was important for me to get out on the road and work in a live situation, whether it be smaller gigs or whether, you know, no matter what the music was like, I just wanted to go out and work. Otherwise, I think it would have cracked up in London. So for me, it was beneficial, you know, to be in Grand Slam. I mean, in retrospect, I can see that some of the supporters may have wanted us to be Thin Lizzy Mark II, and we did do a couple of Lizzy songs, but, I mean, for me, it was interesting to, A, go down a peg, and B, you know, try out new material.
Time now for part three of our interview, the last ever radio interview with Phil, which took place at his home in Kew at the tail end of 1985 before his sad death on January the 4th, 1986. And following on from the success of Out in the Fields and his final single, 19, I was keen to find out what was next for him as far as recording was concerned.
I don't know. I mean, what I'm going to do is a solo album, as opposed to, say, the way I did it with Grand Slam. This time I'm gonna get the record deal, which I have, make the album, and then the songs I have, I'm gonna try and get, say, with a song like Harlem, for example, I'll just take songs that, you know, well, say that's a funkier, then say 19, which is a rock one, I would look for funk players to record Harlem, and then I'd look for heavy rock players.
So you're picking individual musicians then, really, for the album?
Yeah, like, for example, Gary obviously is gonna work on the album. John Sykes, who I've mentioned, he's going to work on the album. Tony Thompson from Powerhouse Station, he's going to work on the album. I was thinking of asking Brian Downey to work on the album. So I'll get the individuals to work on the tracks, and then maybe when I've got the solo album done, then form a band and tour with the album.
So the last two solo albums weren't really along the same vein as Lizzy. They're a lot lighter, if you like. Are you going to put a little bit of everything into the new solo album, or is it just going to be along the same lines as the last two?
No, I think they'll be completely... I think this solo album will be like a solo album. When I did the other two, they were like solo projects, you know, like I was in Thin Lizzy.
As it, you wanted to get right away from
so
that.
So I couldn't really turn around and do any really hard rock stuff, because the comparisons would have immediately went to... Well, I thought it was a good idea not to play songs that were in the same sort of tempo, so with the same aggression that with Lizzy, because I wanted Lizzy to have the choice of them songs. So I always did an alternative sort of style.
So like what you were doing there was that, like, Lizzy was the main
thing? Yeah, as long as I'm in a band, that's the main thing, you know. When they get the choice of any of the material I write, you know, whether it be Thin Lizzy, Grand Slam, whatever band I'm in, they get the choice. But when I was doing a solo project, I just did the alternative ones. This time, it would be much easier for me just to take what I like doing, whether it be a rock song or a funk song, or whether it... You know, whatever.
Planet Rock Breakfast celebrating the life and work of Philip Paris Lynott, who would have been 65 yesterday, by rerunning the interview that I did with Phil at the tail end of 1985, which sadly turned out to be his last ever radio interview. That's the re-recorded version of Still In Love With You that appears on the B-side of the 12-inch version of Out In The Fields, and Phil explained why that song was re-recorded.
Gary really wanted to do that, much more so than anything else, and I didn't mind doing it because it is such a nice song. The story that goes behind it is that initially when it first came out, the one with Frankie Miller singing on it, that's Gary playing on it. But we got the record deal with tracks like that, with Phonogram. And so consequently, Brian Robertson had to learn the solo note for note. I mean, even Gary found difficulty recording it this time, trying to play the solo anyway different than the original one. It's all based on that structure. So as the song became popular, you know, during Lizzy's career, that solo became regarded as Brian Robertson's solo. So it was a bit of an injustice to Gary. So I think this sort of evened up the books a bit by doing a version with Gary.
Because you've speeded up a bit as well, haven't you, on the new version? It's a little bit more up-tempo.
Yeah, we just tried to make it just a little more dance acceptable, you know, as opposed to... I mean, the song... It's a nice ballad, but you can do... There's a way of doing slow songs. You can either do them... You see, I think, like, for example, say, this guy, Billy Ocean, at the moment, I think it's a perfect example. It's only out of a casual interest as a songwriter do you notice things like this. But like Billy Ocean did a heavy sort of song, well, heavy-ish with a heavy guitar and stuff like that. So I was interested to see if he was into that cross between heavy and dance music. And then he came out with a ballad called Suddenly or something, you know, like. But to me, that really plods because it's not in a tempo. Whereas if it had been in a tempo, you know, it would actually help the song. For example, a song Thin Lizzy did called Sarah, right? I wrote that, and when I wrote it, it was a ballad. Now, if it hadn't been put into a dance tempo, it really would have been very over-the-top sentimental. Yeah. Sometimes, if I'm writing on the piano, for example, and I can't play the piano, I know the basics, and all the chords sound different, so you could play three chords on the piano, which you'd know on the guitar, and you couldn't get a song out of, but because it's a different instrument, a different sound, it gives you different, you hear different harmonics, and therefore you draw it a sort of different melody. Or if I wrote on the bass, or on a six-string guitar, they're the three main things I write on. So if I wrote on the bass, say, for example, a riffy song would come, say something like Dance in the Moonlight or Thunder and Lightning, you know, I'd write sort of riffs like that and it'd be sort of a groove.
This is Paul Anthony. Time now for the final part of Phil Lynott's last ever radio interview during the week that he would have been 65. And one thing I had to ask Phil at that stage, was there anything in particular he missed following the split of Thin Lizzy a couple of years earlier?
Oh, lots of things. I mean, Lizzy is like a girlfriend that you were madly in love with at one stage, but you can't go back to, you know? So it's not often I'm in love with the idea of being in love with her, you know, like seeing her again and being with her again, but actually knowing it's impossible. You can't really go back.
Because it seemed to go, I don't know, when you were with Snowy White, it seemed to sort of drop off a little bit, and then with John Sykes seemed to inject that adrenaline straight away. Did you ever regret sort of saying, well, that's it, you know, that's the end of Lizzy?
Yeah, obviously, but... And Sykesy did inject an awful lot of a thing. But by that time, I'd say there was only me, Sykesy, and maybe Downey was interested in really keeping it alive. Everybody else was, you know, from the management and the record company's point of view, were really into folding the whole thing. So by then, you know, he just fell into place. We were outvoted and outnumbered, and that was it.
Finally, a question you must get asked loads of times from absolutely everybody. Do you ever intend to reform Thin Lizzy at any time? You know, does that ever sort of stick in the back of your mind? Well, if, I don't know, you say you needed the money or you wanted the exposure again, would you ever think of reforming Thin Lizzy?
I don't think so, to tell you the truth. And I'd hate to give people false hopes. You know, there's no intentions of forming Thin Lizzy. I mean, I think if Thin Lizzy... You know, and just by saying it, it insinuates that it could happen. But if Thin Lizzy were to reform, it would either be out of desperation, you know, we're all looking for money or mortgages to pay or whatever, or it'd be out of nostalgia, which would be the acceptable way for me, if there was to be an acceptable way. You know, I'd like to get back together with the lads just to see if we could do it again. But there's no intentions of that at the moment.